Hey there, witch bitches. Popping up in here before the credit sequence with a little email for you guys. Siren, are you excited to hear what someone wrote into us?
I am super stoked because I have it on good authority that whoever wrote this email is in fact hot.
This is an email from one of our listeners, Mike. Mike and I connected on Instagram, and he reached out to me about his initiation experience in Wicca and with a little information about the Oak and Holly King mythology that we did not know previously. So,
oh, okay. So this was like a response to our Love Witch
episode. Yeah, this is a response to our Love Witch episode.
Okay, great. All right, I'm fascinated.
All right. So, Mike says, hey Phoenix, hey Siren, I'm writing to you with about a margarita and a half in my system, so sorry if I ramble.
No worries, boo, that's how I do every fucking episode.
First, I figured I'd fill you in a little bit on the whole Holly King, Oak King mythos associated with the solstices. You folks seemed pretty confused about the Holly King's prominence during Letha, which is valid like a salad. Who the fuck thinks of Holly during June? Well, the story goes that the Holly King comes into power on the summer solstice because from then on, the days keep getting shorter and colder until the winter solstice and the Oak King reclaims his throne, or the hand of the goddess in other versions. I prefer the throne because I'd rather objectify a chair than the divine feminine, but that's just me.
I like him so much already.
You also asked, he's so nice, he's so nice, and indeed he is attractive. You also asked to write in to share about coven initiation experiences. Mine was a little weird, to be honest. I didn't really know I was joining a coven until the initiation ceremony itself. I'm an eclectic Wiccan, and I've been practicing witchcraft since I was about 17. When I was around 20, I decided to go for an official self-dedication and follow a year and a day. About 6 months in, a dear friend of mine who runs a witchcraft shop offered to formally welcome me onto the path during the shop's Samhain ritual, which was open to the public. I thought she meant to celebrate my 6-month milestone, but on the night of the ritual, she explained, "No, I mean, I want to initiate you into my coven." I was totally honored and loved all of the coven members, so I had no reason to say no. It was a pretty standard Samhain ritual, but right before the cakes and ale, I was anointed with the blessed oil, asked if I was ready to join the coven, and given a piece of jewelry when I said yes. Then my friend, who was the high priestess, said a prayer to the god and goddess to bless my initiation and my spiritual journey that day forward. They go on to say some more stuff about how the coven didn't last very long, but that in today's branches of witchcraft and spirituality, a coven isn't really what's required.
So we have a story about like a formal coven initiation, but it's not like the horror story that we were talking about last time, which one would hope not.
Yeah, I'm really glad that he didn't have this experience. He ends the email with, anywho, now I'm about 2 margaritas in and I just want to say how much I enjoy your podcast. Y'all are funny, insightful, and you make the 12-year-old witchy TV geek within me leap with joy while still covering important topics and how witchcraft plays a role in them. Can't wait to hear your next podcast. Much love, Mike.
Well, shit. Thanks, Mike. That is so sweet. Oh my god. Oh, I love him.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I'm the kind of stain that only shows up under a black light. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I'm just one medical setback away from being a Life Alert commercial, Siren Rex Fry. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
Today we're talking about Charmed Season 1, Episode 20, The Power of Two.
Yeah, no, the episode is called The Power of Two because, Piper's not in it.
According to IMDb, this episode rated 7.9 out of 10, which is a little too high in my opinion, and is the one where Piper is sent by her job to Hawaii, leaving Prue and Phoebe by themselves to face a ghost who serially kills people that had to do with his execution for revenge. Dun dun dun!
Dun dun dun!
This episode was written by Brad Kern and directed by Elodie Keene.
Have you noticed, Phoenix, that no matter what the IMDb rating is, you never agree with it?
I mean, I hardly ever do, yeah.
They pretty much hover around the 8 mark no matter what, and every time time, you're like, that's too high. That's too low. According to IMDb, Charmed is just a solid 8 out of 10. So, like, you either agree or you don't.
listen, apparently my tastes vastly differ from the straight white film dudes that watch movies and review them on IMDb.
The only people reviewing Charmed on IMDb are Charmed fans. Nobody else is even visiting the page. Like, it's just, like, 7 people who own the box set and us. Like, that's it.
I mean, where's the
it's
line?
It's honestly probably nothing but Charmed podcasters. That's the only people looking at it. So it's just you, me, and Kevin. Done.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I seldom am.
I feel like looking at the IMDb of Charmed is just kind of like being in a Charmed Facebook group. It's like fun, but it also makes you a little sad, you know?
Basically, except Charmed Facebook groups mostly just leave me annoyed, but also feeling superior. I feel like we're going to have the same opinions about this episode. I'm pretty mixed on this one because Piper's not in it. I mean, she's there, but she's not in it. You understand? Like, Holly Marie Combs is in the episode, but she's not, like, in the story.
Yeah.
And I think she's Phoenix and I, we pretty much agree that she's our favorite character. So it's kind of like, why?
Yeah.
But also, this episode contains one of the most satisfying fights ever. I love the fight scene in this episode. I love it. And I think you're going to like the way we present it to you or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of this episode. I think mostly because Piper isn't in it. Something is really missing from the dynamic without her. And it's kind of hard to put your finger on. And maybe it's because there's just a little bit more tension without her there.
Which I think is the point.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point.
It definitely served as a plot device to develop Phoebe and Prue's relationship a little more, because we really haven't gotten a lot of resolution with the two of them since the Roger thing in episode 1. So I feel like this is a way to kind of, like, get their relationship past this, like, petty discourse before the end of the season, so we don't have to deal with it in season 2.
Even though we will, anyway. I would call this episode kind of a false resolution.
Oh.
Because in the end, it seems like things have resolved between Phoebe and Prue, but that almost becomes like just an episodic character trait, because we'll revisit these tropes and battles again.
Yeah.
Especially, obviously, in a certain episode in season 3, you're gonna see that it really ain't fucking over. So Piper is going on a trip, and she can't find anything she needs to go on this trip, because Phoebe has randomly stolen objects throughout the house, like she's a motherfucking fairy, and she's using them to meditate while sitting on an end table at the base of the stairs that I'm pretty sure doesn't exist.
I understand that this is just to have her in the scene, but why is she choosing to do this on the table? You're supposed to be comfortable during meditation. And, like, I don't know if you've ever sat on a table before, but it is not a comfortable thing to do.
But it's just like sitting cross-legged on, you know, the end table. It's so, like, esoteric or whatever. Like, even.
It's disappointing to me that they aren't filming this scene in the kitchen, because then we could say that Phoebe's being counterintuitive.
I literally hate you. I'm not laughing. That's the worst joke ever.
It's funny. I don't even care.
I'm so done with you.
So Phoebe has this premonition of Piper missing her flight. And if you go to the airport and see just a random plane taking off, why would you automatically assume it's yours?
Because Piper causes all her own problems. She gets to the airport, she sees a plane taking off, and she's like, oh, well, obviously that one is mine, because my stupid bitch screw-uppy sister hid my fucking plane ticket. God damn it. But yeah, so the premonition doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's largely symbolic anyway.
Piper and Prue give Phoebe a list of things to do, like, that's gonna fucking work out. And Phoebe volunteers to help and then gets mad when she actually has to do it.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Prue says the episode title.
The power of two, we'll just have to do. That's not the only time that we hear that kind of line, either.
It's not. They do revisit it, but this is the first time it's used, and it's because Piper's all like, oh my god, what if you have to fight evil without me? And Prue's like, it doesn't fucking matter, because I do everything without the two of you all the fucking time.
Prue is kind of like, they do just pile on to Phoebe's to-do list without any sort of, like, can you do this?
Okay, it gets a little bit that way, but, like, Piper's stressing out, and she has this massive to-do list, and Phoebe takes it from her and is like, don't worry, sweetie, I'll take care of it, and then 2 seconds later, she's mad that she's expected to do it. Okay, girl.
I don't know that she's mad that she's expected to do it. I think that she gets frustrated when Prue is like, you've got nothing but time because you're a lazy bitch and you don't work. And I mean, later we get to the root of that issue for Phoebe, but I feel like it's not just that she has to do these things. It's that she's expected to because she doesn't do anything else.
But I will tell you that basically the way this episode goes down is that one little comment there, like, grows and festers and explodes. And if that ain't what it's like having a sister, I don't know what is.
And that is why communication is key in all relationships. You have to talk to each other.
Or you can seethe and boil until you get into a really, really satisfying smackdown. And that's just how I would play it, but anyway.
Or, you know, you can keep quiet until your made-up friend Marianne calls to go on a field trip to Alcatraz. And then immediately crumble up the to-do list that your sisters gave you, as Phoebe does.
Okay, but that is like, okay, it's so random. Like, I don't know, I think it's really random just like being an adult and like having a random field trip. I mean, good for you. That sounds fun, I guess. But that's the kind of shit, that's the kind of jacking off shit that you can do whenever you feel like it, when you don't have a job. So Phoebe is going basically on a field trip to a museum of white supremacy and capitalism. That's what she's doing. And you know you have to pay to get in there. Whose money is she using? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But her life is so hard. She has to do chores.
She's using the, like, $17 in tips she made from the time that she fucking blew up the sink in Piper's restaurant when it was closed.
That tracks. Or, like, the 20 she swiped out of Prue's purse. All right, so we have two kind of prominent guest stars for this episode. There's Brenda Bukkake. I don't know.
When I first read that, I immediately thought it said Bukkake.
Brenda Bukkake as Caron. Stop it. You made me say that. I'm sorry, Brenda. And Jeff Kober. Shut the fuck up, Phoenix.
I'm sorry, Brenda.
Oh my god. And Jeff Kober as Jackson Ward. Brenda Bukkake did a lot of Well, I think with a name like that, we all know what she did a lot of. dear sweet Brenda. Brenda did a lot of random roles on on like low budget sci-fi, fantasy, and horror productions. From the other things I know her from, she appeared in an episode of Supernatural and another one of Dollhouse and like several other things, and she was in this kind of big 90s movie called LA Confidential. They list her as like special guest star. But when you look up her credits, you're just kind of like, what's special about her? I mean, I guess we know what other kind of film roles she's probably doing. We're going to hell.
What episode of Supernatural was she in? I don't know if I recognize her.
I forget.
Let's talk about Jeff Kober, because I know him.
I swear I read it. I know. We're going to hear from Brenda Bukkake's lawyer by, like, next week. She's going to be all over us. Yeah, so Jeff Kober has had so many TV and film roles. I'm sure you've seen him in something, especially if you're a fan of the same things that we are. He's done Supernatural. He was multiple characters on different episodes of Buffy. I think a lot of you will remember him as the vampire with the iconic line,
My pills!
My pills!
What did you do to my pills? If I was at full Slayer power, I'd be punning right about now. I did immediately recognize him from Buffy. He plays Kralik, that vampire with the pill-popping problem. And Rack in Buffy, the fucking sketchy drug dealer wizard that Willow fries the fuck out of.
Oh yeah, that fucking guy.
Mm-hmm. So Jeff Kober plays Jackson Ward in this episode, who is a ghost that's stuck on Alcatraz, and Caron wants a witch's soul real bad.
Real bad.
And she has this convoluted plan of helping Jackson to lure herself a witch. And Phoebe's on the Alcatraz tour while Carone kills the tour guide and Jackson gets in his body. But can you imagine dying at work?
It's like literally my worst nightmare. And since I'm always fucking there, it's probably going
to
happen.
Like, this guy was just going about his day, looking forward to his banquet brand microwave beef bolognese after his 9-to-5. And then boom, killed by the barefoot Contessa.
Barefoot Contessa.
Like,
she is, though. She doesn't wear shoes. She's a really bad pedicure, you guys.
Why has she got no shoes on?
It's so weird. She does. Why does she have no shoes? I don't know. I don't know, but it sure ain't better be to show off that sloppy ass
fucking
shellac job. Like, it is bad.
It's really bad. The nail tech was like, do you want some acrylic? And she was like, nah, I'm good. It'll chip.
Yeah. So this barefoot flying soap opera bitch, she kills this guy. And Phoebe's, like, watching it happen, and nobody else can see what's going on. So she's, like, freaking out and stuff, and everyone else on the tour is more concerned with judging Phoebe for acting like a lunatic rather than the guy who just had a heart attack right in front of them.
Well, let's talk about the character that Brenda Bukkake is portraying in this episode, because it's not a role that makes a lot of sense. So let's get into it.
Wrong.
I can think of a million reasons. Mm-mm. You're mistaken.
Untrue.
You're mistaken. That is not correct.
The character that Brenda Bukkake plays in this episode is named Carone in the credits, although she never gets named on screen. And Prue and Phoebe each only see her once for like a sec, so they never figure out what she is either. By her own exposition, Carone takes souls to hell, but not because that's her moral imperative, but rather because she gets a credit for it or something. Soup's unclear what her reward is.
Yeah, she's like, I need a witch's soul so I can get $20 in store credit for the gap. Like,
basically, $20 in store credit for hell, which I guess the gap would be the store that you would shop at.
I mean, maybe that's why she doesn't have any shoes. She doesn't have enough store credit.
That's what it is. That's what it is. She needs to go to the hell outdoor mall and get herself a pair of flip-flops. Even though she could take Jackson's soul to hell, she really wants to take a witch's soul to hell because that'll get her, like, mad kudos or whatever. Her powers that we see are levitating, being invisible and probably intangible, teleporting, randomly giving people heart attacks, and capturing souls with her bare hands. She does not get vanquished in this episode, and she's the first villain to not get defeated in the series, by the way, and we never ever see her again. Her function as a character is similar to Yama in episode 4. So while she's kind of the big bad, she's actually just setting events in motion that force the Charmed Ones to deal with the ghost. But she's also kind of Jackson Ward's support character, but her goal is to use him to make the Charmed Ones vulnerable and steal their souls, which, spoilers, she's really bad at. Like, almost as bad as her pedicurist.
So like Yama, it seems like they just applied the name to some super random Reaper character that bears no resemblance to the original myths, right?
That's basically what it is, yeah. I think that because the name Carone only appears in the credits and not in the dialogue, and because Carone is not really worshipped by a lot of people past or present, like ever, and the record on Greek mythology is pretty much set straight already, it's not really a huge deal. I wouldn't go so far as to, like, cry cultural appropriation at this, even though, again, yes, you could say that. But Greek mythological characters are just sort of, they evolve in media all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are, like, some Hellenic pagans out there who, like, do, like, worship them and take them very seriously. But I don't know. I guess there's just not the same level of misunderstanding and, like, racial and cultural oppression as some of the other deities we deal with, as there is with Carone here. So I'm not super offended by the social implications of naming this character Charon. I just think it's kind of dumb.
Well, and the thing about it is, a lot of the Greek myths are a lot more readily available than some of the other stuff that we've talked about. And they're a little bit more well-known in general. So when a show takes liberties with something like that, I feel like it's a little bit more okay because you can find the proper information really quickly, really easily from lots of different resources, as opposed to like a Hindu deity where there isn't as much known about them right off the bat.
So it's like, it's different than taking an important deity to a marginalized group and misrepresenting them to people who've never heard of them before. It's not like that.
Yes.
We keep saying Charon, and we want to point out like the spelling of this word. It's C-H-A-R-O-N. And for the longest time, I thought it was just Sharon.
Sharon!
Sharon. But it turns out it's more like Karen. So either way, it's your homophobic white aunt with bad bangs.
So in Greek mythology, Charon is the ferryman who captains this little boat across the river Acheron or the river Styx, depending on the time period. And basically, it's the river that divides the world of the living from the underworld. In writings, he's typically described as a dirty, old bearded man in filthy clothes, but in modern depictions, he's a living skeleton with a black cowl, or like if you're Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, like just a really old grandpa looking guy. But he's like the Grim Reaper for the most part, right?
You know, from these descriptions, it sounds like Charon is like 75% of the guys who hit me up on Grindr.
So it's interesting to me that they took like a gender bent approach to the character.
That is pretty interesting, actually. Although, it's not the first time that we see a Grim Reaper character kind of subverted into this, like, sassy feminine character, because as you pointed out to me when we were discussing this episode, it is a little bit reminiscent of Botan from Yu Yu Hakusho. A little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's more of a benevolent character, but still, it's kind of the same idea.
So in other people's stories, this character is only encountered when a hero must journey into the underworld. And Charon don't work for free, honey. You're going to have that coin. You're going to make them pennies to get yourself...
You're going to have them dollar bills.
A dollar make them holla, honey, boo-boo child. So you have to offer payment to get your soul to the other side. And if you can't pay, your soul has to wander the shores of the river for like at least 100 years.
Charon is also the name of Pluto's largest moon, named after this deity, who in some sense did serve Pluto / Hades. So I think that's kind of cool. I love when like mythology and astronomy blend together in a way that works. I love that.
I didn't know that part. And I'm not as well versed in Greek mythology as you are. Like most of what I know is just from Hercules and Hercules the animated series. So
most of what I know about Greek mythology is way too fucking much, because as we've already established, Phoenix was an ancient Egypt gay and I was an ancient Greek gay.
I was a dinosaur gay, I believe,
gay.
Is what
you
I
said. You were a dinosaur gay. There's so many kinds of gays with hyperfixations you can be. Charon represents an archetype commonly called a psychopomp. Psychopomp is a Greek word that translates as guide of souls, and psychopomps exist across many cultures and religions. The role of psychopomp is to guide the soul to the afterlife, not necessarily to place judgment on them. And yes, the Hindu Yama is also considered a psychopomp, as well as the Egyptian Anubis, the Roman Mercury, and the Norse Valkyries. So I guess the last bit tracks a little bit. This Charon just wants to take you to hell, whether you deserve it or not. I wanted to introduce the psychopomp concept here because this will hardly be the last time that we deal with it, and it does have a lot of like significant symbolic meaning beyond just like the literal like taking you to hell, taking you to the afterlife kind of thing. However, this iteration of Charon is inspired by evil and the Western fear of death and hell, so I just don't think that this is the best time to fully explore it. The Barefoot Contessa is a shit psychopomp.
Psychopomps are also present in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
And they're tiny little birds.
And we might get a chance to talk about that very soon. Who knows?
No hints, no spoilers.
So after the death of this tour guide, we have the opening credits. Siren didn't care about the song this week, so we're not gonna.
You know, I think I did. I think it did. I recall that it's a good song, but I don't know who sings it or what it is. So, soup's prepared. I really hope you leave all of this in the episode. It's gonna make me look stellar. Your girl showed up ready to play today.
So at Buckland's, Claire is being very Devil Wears Prada, complimenting Prue and then threatening her job. But you do have to like show up for work, Prue. Like you have to like be there. That's a thing. To like get paid and to like have employment, you have to go. You don't necessarily have to be there all night like some people, Siren.
Oh my God, you're so boring. But yeah, it's basically just very like, and Emily, you're never here at work, and I'm selling this fucking company because I'm a banker and I don't know what I'm doing here.
But Phoebe calls Prue, and I would just hate to be Prue's assistant. She has to interrupt such awkward situations in this episode. That would suck. Like, hi, I'm sorry, excuse me, I know you're being yelled at right now and I really shouldn't be in here, but you have a phone call.
For sure. Dude, Monique is the assistant's name. She is like so stressed out every time she opens a door and walks into a room. Can you just imagine? She answers the phone. Buckland's, Prue Halliwell's office. How may I help you? And it's motherfucking Phoebe again. Phoebe is her arch nemesis. Phoebe is the subject of every single one of her anxiety dreams about work. She's at her desk. The phone won't stop ringing. It's Phoebe every time. Dear God, don't make me go into bitch Claire's office again.
Monique is at the doctor and he's like, so can you describe to me what's causing you so much anxiety?
No, she's just very woogie man about it. Yeah. Like she's at the psychiatrist and she just looks at him with her black eyes and she says, Phoebe.
And the doctor's like, I'm sorry, I can't give you a prescription for Vicodin just because you don't like your boss's sister.
I can kind of relate to that. That was a real actual truth.
So anyway, Phoebe is filling Prue in on the ghost of Alcatraz and says some dumb shit about her imaginary friend and something about evil spirits needing a dead body to transport them across water. I've never heard that before, but I do know that in one episode of Jackie Chan, the animated series, there was a vampire that couldn't cross a body of water, and to kill him, you had to put a mushroom in his left sock and bury it in a church.
That's elaborate. And again, I'm just going to say that that story references both a foot fetish and abusing masculine. So I'm into it. But no, there are some myths about just evil in general, not being able to cross running water. And that is something that is commonly applied to vampires, although it doesn't typically make it into modern iterations of vampires because then, you know, how could they go like romantically sailing or whatever?
Oh, but in the movie Mom's on a Date with a Vampire, that vampire can't go across the body of water.
Yeah. So it's more of an older myth that's not used very often in fiction. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a thing. What I found interesting about it is even though it was kind of a dumb rule that like basically Caron had to kill that security guard / tour guide so that Jackson could squat in his corpse and be transported across the bay, that's a bit much for me, but you could say that Caron did ferry Jackson over the river in a way.
Oh yeah, she kind of did.
So, kind of. Anyway, basically, so, like, Phoebe's, like, you know, talking about ghosts, and Prue is like, get some tampons, you lazy bitch, I have a job to do.
So Phoebe has done all this research on this fucking prehistoric laptop with some kind of, like, protozoic Google. Did they even have search engines in the 90s? You couldn't even text Cha-Cha till like 2006.
Yeah, no, there was, like, Mama and Ask Jeeves, and they were married. I remember that.
I was not using computers in 1998. I was breaking rakes in my backyard.
Were you even fucking born? I don't.
Yes, like I was born in 96. Thank you.
Okay. Well, then, what the hell do you know about computers from when you were three? You fucking child.
Why didn't she just use the book? Oh, yeah, that's right. Because it sucks. The book is awful. It has no useful information ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, she was looking up, like, shit about Alcatraz. So, like, other than, like, prehistoric internet, I guess you would, what, use, like, the Encyclopedia Britannica? I don't know.
I don't know how research worked in the 90s. I was not doing it.
I don't know. Phoebe is a young, hot Gen Xer, or she's a member of the Y generation with average hair. It's unclear. She knows how to use the net. Phoenix. She knows how to surf the web.
Yes, I was going to say, I believe it is the web. She refers to it as the web.
And chat rooms saved her life. So I don't know how you can even question her at this point. The evidence is irrefutable.
Speaking of evidence, Daryl's like, fuck, bro. they're reviewing our old case files and we are fucked. And hey, Prue's really fucked you up. And then Detective Power Suit comes in. And do you think that Detective Power Suit is their boss? Because she feels like a boss-ass bitch.
She does feel like a boss-ass bitch, but I think she's just like a coworker. Because she's very casual with them. She just like walks in, like she goes and like talks shit with them all the time.
Mm.
Or whatever.
She walks in and she's like, "Hey, Mulder and Scully, I've got some questions for ya."
Basically, I don't even know her name, but I do think that Detective Power Suit is pretty cool. But she's only like in this one scene for like a minute.
Yeah. Anyway, she talks about how there was a murder very recently, and how there were no evidence except for one singular thumbprint that they got by fluoroscoping. And listen, don't do that in my bedroom. Because
yeah, we ain't gonna find some fingerprints in there.
This basically just serves to get Andy invested into the main story, because the fingerprint matched Jackson Ward. Duh.
Do you know what I am thinking about this episode right now? I'm kind of putting it together as we talk about it. There are a lot of extras in this episode who aren't white.
Oh.
And I don't think any of them die.
Oh my.
So don't get it twisted. I'm not saying great representation, because most of these characters have like one or two lines and they're done. But so Phoebe's friend Marianne, who doesn't say shit, is an Asian woman.
Mm-hmm.
Prue's assistant Monique is an Asian woman. Detective Power Stew is Latina. And in a little bit, there's also going to be some Asian investors in Bucklands. And I don't even know how many more. But there are more than normal extras of color in this episode, and none of them die, so that's
Rodriguez in the end something of the episode.
Oh yeah, and then don't get me started on Inspector Rodriguez, but I have a thing about him anyway.
Well, I feel like maybe we might see him again, so we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay, so Prue comes home from work to dirty dishes and an empty fridge, and damn it, Phoebe, I told you to have dinner ready at 7, you lazy good-for-nothing bitch, why did I marry you? And Phoebe's all like, "I know I said I would pull my weight around here, but I'm actually a paranormal investigator now." That was pretty good.
So Andy shows up to talk about ghost murders, and Phoebe's like, "Yeah, bitch, I know. Ultraviolet fingerprint is ectoplasm. That's ghost skin. Do you know what ectoplasm is?"
Do you know what is so funny? Is I meant to do research for this, and then, because I am batting 1,000 today, I didn't.
I feel like I just read this in Witch's Book of Spirits by Devin Hunter.
Okay.
I believe he talked about ectoplasm a little bit, but I can't cite it from memory because there were only like a handful of things from that book that really stuck out to me as something I wanted to continue incorporating into my practice. So I can't quote it off the top of my head, but it's in there.
So, okay. So I can maybe off the top of my head speak to ectoplasm in fantasy media, at least. It is a concept that shows up a lot in anything to do with ghosts. I think the most popular example I can think of is Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
Ectoplasm was always in the original film. But in that movie, ectoplasm is like a profuse amount of slime that just like bursts out of nowhere every time a ghost is around. And so you have people like walking around looking like they just like took a load in the face from Slimer.
It was like a Nickelodeon orgasm.
Yeah. Nickelodeon orgasm. That's exactly what it fucking is. That might be the episode title. Oh, I don't know. That has a little bit of a connotation, doesn't it? Okay, we'll think about it. We'll put that one on the back burner. So ectoplasm is kind of one of those pseudoscience-y words, mm-hmm. again, I think. Like, it's mostly used by people who, like, claim to, like, study ghosts and spirits, and it's one of the things they use as, like, evidence, basically. Like, I have this evidence, I have this slime or whatever, to prove that this ghost was really here. Of course, any scientific study revolving around ghosts is not widely accepted by the scientific community, and I'm sure there are probably lots of good reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not prepared to give like an actual intelligent thesis right now. And I feel super bad about that, but I'm also over it because I am drinking a gin and tonic right now and I made it way too strong, Phoenix.
From what my understanding is from like a mythical standpoint, it's, if I remember correctly, it's something that's produced when mediums make spirit contact. And sometimes it's like just an energy and other times it's like a physical manifestation. The slime from the Ghostbusters.
Okay, so because I'm a dork, I just went and looked up the etymology of ectoplasm real quick. And I can tell you that it means external growth or development. Boy, I'm gonna need you to come over and deal with this ectoplasm.
The off-screen victim is the son of the prosecutor who convicted Jackson Ward. And Andy is having this, like, existential crisis. Like, how do we stop a ghost? Who are you gonna call? Taps.
Basically, he, like, seeks solace in their ficus for a minute.
Somebody needs to call sci-fi and get the guys from Ghost Hunters over here. Like, stat. Jackson murders all of the people who tried his case. So in the next scene, Jackson is about to murder the judge who tried his case. And hey, a white male throwaway character for once in the fucking show history.
Yeah, I'm okay with this character dying.
This scene is actually like pretty scary.
Okay, it would be pretty fucking scary if Judge Renault could sell it at all, but his reaction to being murdered by a ghost is to go full befuddled honky tonk. What's going on? The lead singer of Four Non Blondes does not really sell it.
What's going on?
What's going on?
Anyway. Jackson's just getting real stabby, and Caron is, she has no time. But when I watched the scene, I literally went, oh no, a white man in the judicial system in peril. No, stop. No, don't do that. No.
Well, I mean, we're framed to see this as like a tragedy or whatever, because this judge convicted this obvious serial killer, and we're just going to gloss over the probably scores of Black and Latino teenagers that he put away for nonviolent drug charges. I've had it. Stab away, Jack. Yeah, but Caron shows up to chastise Jackson for wasting her time, and she acts super annoyed by the multiple stabbings. She's like, I do not have time for this. Are you going to fuck with those witches or not? I know that this is a family show, but the judge was stabbed multiple times. I think they say at least like 13 or something, and there is no blood anywhere. Nowhere. He's lying face up on a rug, and there is no blood anywhere. On his clothes, on the rug, on the floor, nowhere.
Shit.
And that just ain't what happens with multiple stabbing. I'm assuming, I'm not like speaking from like my experience of when I stabbed someone 13 times. Like, that's not what I'm saying to you right now. But I don't think that that's how it works.
I wouldn't assume so, no. I bumped my finger with a knife a couple days ago and I bled for a long time. So,
dude, I shave my fucking face sometimes and I bleed through like 5 layers of foundation. It's ridiculous.
But apparently Andy is a ghost expert now and he's acting all fucking superior, being like, did you fluoroscope the letter opener?
Basically, he got on Ghostopedia, tap, 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 and now he knows what he's talking about.
Fucking stupid bitch.
Yeah, so then Andy tells Daryl to put together a list of people connected to the trial.
Bossy. Andy's a bossy bottom, I'm convinced.
Mm-hmm, you'd like that, I'm sure. Actually, no. I like my bottoms to shut the fuck up.
I like verse boys. It's more fun.
I mean, okay, no, you're right. I just like, if I'm going to be dominant, like, you're going to do whatever the fuck I say, or else my fragile confidence will be shattered.
So, maybe Dom Top shouldn't be on your Grindr profile.
It's not. I took it off. Nobody believed it anyway.
So, at Buckland's, Claire just fucking hates Prue, and she really needs a pill. She's like fucking Elliot Spencer's mom. And there's some Asian men there with some offensive accents that are trying to buy Buckland's, and Andy shows up and just makes shit weird.
Their accents are, like, super offensive, though. Like, they act like it's their, like, third day of kindergarten speaking English kind of thing, and you know none of them actually talk that way. You know, most Japanese people, especially Japanese businessmen, probably speak English better than most dumbass fucking Americans. But no, he's in there with this racist ass accent. So yes, we have more extras of color, but what the fuck is that accent? What are you, I don't buy it.
At least somebody in production was like, hey, do you think maybe you could use an accent?
Hey, do you think maybe you could act like a stupid offensive stereotype for our benefit? Yeah, go for it. Hey, make you a deal. We won't kill you. Do you know what I just put together in my head? And I'm gonna be pissed about it now. So I'm thinking there are probably more of, other than any other non-white ethnicity represented, there are probably more Asian extras and secondary characters than any other non-white race in this show. And that is probably a nod to the fact that San Francisco is known for Chinatown. Of course, the other thing, the other minority group that San Francisco is known for is its vibrant, thriving gay culture. And they, of course, don't include any gay characters for that reason. And I'm not going off and saying that they treat these Asian characters well. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it was probably a little bit deliberate to have more Asians involved in the show because of Chinatown, but they didn't have the same respect for queers, and I've had it. And which is not to say they had respect for Asians. It's not what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying. We shouldn't pit minorities against each other. I'm just pissed.
Yeah, no, it's upsetting. And I mean, we could go on and on and on about the queer representation in this show, and unfortunately, there's just not a lot of opportunities to do that because there's no fucking queer characters in this show.
Which is why I will at least bitch.
As if that's different from any other time.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit extra. It's a little bit extra right now. Because I was trying to go to sleep, and you told me I had to bitch up, so I did. So Prue brings Andy up to the attic, and Phoebe starts speaking Fibbish. Fibbish is what it's called when you do that stupid code language where you add a bunch of B's to your words.
Oh.
To try to make it harder to understand. You know, Phoebe, she says, Bubuk above Shabadobos.
Oh, I thought...
where you just add a bunch of B's on every vowel. That's called Fibbish. Which, Fibbish, if you translate Fibbish in Fibbish to English, it's fish. And I can't justify that. I can't. But that's just how it works. And that's what it's called. And I know this because I am smart.
I thought it was Ubby Dubby from Zoom.
I don't even know what you just said. But
did I hallucinate this show? Because every time I bring it up, nobody knows what I'm talking about. Did anybody?
That would be super awkward for you. And you must look just really ridiculous every time.
I swear to God it was real. I swear to God. Look it up.
Look it up, bitch. I can't even spell it.
So Andy's like losing his shit over the Book of Shadows. And here's the thing. I don't understand why ghosts is such a far jump from witches and demons. And more importantly, how was it worse? Is it just because he's Catholic and he's familiar with the other stuff? Why is he freaking out so much over this?
Oh, I didn't think that he was freaking out about ghosts. I thought he was freaking out about the book. Like, he's like pointing at the book when he's talking about, I never imagined this could ever exist. So it's like the Book of Shadows just like blew his fucking face off. Well,
I thought it was the contents of the book, like reading about the ghosts and spirits and stuff and all the things that were there. Because
I mean, maybe just like the whole shebang.
Yeah, because when they're downstairs, when he first shows up, he's like, I don't know if I'm ready for ghosts. Getting used to witches and demons, but I don't know about them dead peoples. So I kind of think you have noted that Prue is not wearing a bra, and you are correct. She's not.
She is so not wearing a bra.
And
I don't want to have to comment on it, but she's commenting on it all by herself.
It's
okay.
It's fine. Like, free the nipple, whatever. I think she's dressed just in general far too casually for just being at work. But she doesn't really give a fuck about her job anyway, so.
She doesn't. She's about to quit that job every other week, and the other week she wants to stay, she's about to get fired. She can wear whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah, she just likes to say she has one to make Phoebe feel bad.
Basically. Although, you know, there's a part in season two where Jack makes a comment about the way Prue dresses at work.
Yeah, there is.
And I mean, like, it's a little sexist, it's a little screwball comedy, it's a little bit correct. So what transpires is the Book of Shadows, after blowing Andy's mind, magically opens to the truth spell so that Andy and Prue can have a super tense argument revisiting episode 8. Fun.
Fun.
So I want to talk about how it's not canon yet, but in like the first episode of season 2, we're going to learn that for the most part, Grams is flipping the pages of the Book of Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to think that in this moment, Grams was like, oh, look, Andy and Prue are standing in front of the Book of Shadows together. What if I flipped to the truth spell and caused them to get into a fight?
It's just one of those instances of Grams hating men.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You're so fucking right. There's no other explanation now. Grams was just literally on her feminazi man rage that day.
She's like, I want to fuck with this dude.
Get this fucking cop out of my house.
Get this fucking penis attached to this waste of space out of my house.
Yeah, no, like Grams like full on looked at Andy and Prue, knowing the secrets, getting close again. And she was like, what's going on? So anyway, so this whole ordeal causes Prue to tell Andy that she cast the truth spell on him last year. And then they get into this huge fight. And the thing that I don't love about it, slash totally love about it, is that Prue, like, goes full on, like, gaslight gatekeep girl boss on Andy. And she tells him that he freaked out on her during the truth spell episode, which is so not true. He did not freak out on her at all. Mm-mm. He just, like, very calmly was like, I don't think I can deal with this. I don't want to be part of this. But she's like, you freaked out on me, just like you're freaking out right now.
No, he didn't.
It did not happen. And Andy's like, well, I don't remember it, so I'm forced to just accept what you're telling me, even though it's a lie, which is actually gaslighting.
Andy's like, how are we gonna stop Jackson from killing again? And she's like, I have a power too, you know. Don't discount my discount premonitions, girl.
So Andy gets the murder weapon out of evidence to give it to his ex-girlfriend's sister. So that chain of custody is fucked. And then the evidence locker desk jockey rats Andy out to someone. Andy gets his list of potential victims from Daryl and refuses to tell him anything. And that's when Inspector Rodriguez shows up to interrogate Daryl.
Inspector Rodriguez, enter screen left.
Inspector Rodriguez interrogates Inspector Morris is definitely something that I would watch on Love the Cock. What?
In this episode, Phoebe seems to have remastered the ability to control her premonitions, but of course she'll use that again because she is a scrippy bitch.
Not even once.
Not even a little bit, not even at all.
Yeah, so she has a premonition of a Life Alert commercial, aka Siren on a Tuesday, and they go off to rescue Republican Grandma.
As they go save Betty Crocker from this fucking floating knife. Jackson reveals to Prue that he saw Phoebe at Alcatraz, and Prue is like, this fucking lying skank. Bitch, skank, she whore. I'm so mad. And he lays out some threats. He throws the gauntlet. He slaps him in the face with a little white glove as he leaves. Even though he has, like, every advantage in this situation, he could totally win easily.
Is Jackson actually attempting to use a knife in this scene?
Yeah.
It is a knife that he has, right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, his murder weapons are so fucking stupid.
Oh, God.
He killed that judge with a letter opener. So I'm going to give him a little bit of credit for using this knife. But, like, it's about to get stupid.
It's
about to get real stupid.
And also, that knife looks rubbery as fuck. That did not look like a real knife at all. No. The prop department dropped the ball. And it's not like he even had to stab anybody with it. They could have used a real kitchen knife for that.
Yeah, because he was just holding it. But no, they straight up bought that knife at Dollar General in October.
That was fucking some Spirit Halloween bullshit.
Prue and Phoebe go home to have a huge fight about how Phoebe is a worthless, lazy, screw-up slut, and Prue is a ball-busting, judgmental bitch who has to take care of everything. I love this fight. I love it. I wonder if you're going to disagree with me, because, like, I'm so on Prue's side in this fight. 100%, and I'm sure you're gonna fucking tell me you're on.
I kind of am on Phoebe's side. I don't think Phoebe is totally wrong. Could she have maybe postponed her trip to Alcatraz? Yes. To do her womanly duties? Yeah, I'm sure she could have fucking waited. But helping around the house is contributing to the household, even if she did stop to go audition for Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters. Like, she did help. You know, she is helping.
Except she didn't do it, though. She didn't do it.
No, she didn't do it. She didn't, but she has done it.
She talk a big game, but she didn't do shit.
Well, you know what? I guess we're just gonna have to fucking hammer this out.
I guess we're just going to have to lay it all out for you listeners and let you decide who's in the fucking right.
Drama. Talent. Suffering. This is a dramatic reenactment, and we are sorry.
I cannot believe you lied to me, and I cannot believe I had to hear about it from a ghost.
I didn't tell you the truth because I knew you'd go ballistic, and I thought I'd save myself the drama.
I'm fine, I'm calm, and I am never mean. Ever.
No, you're mad at me because you think I'm a lazy, worthless, screw-uppy slutbag, and I don't have a job, and I never do housework, and I just live here being a filthy mooch and trying to start my paranormal investigation business.
I am sorry that I ask for the actual bare minimum from you while I do literally everything else.
You literally just proved my main point, that I get no credit for anything that I do around here. When was the last time you went to get groceries with the money that you give to me? Or vacuumed the house, which is almost exclusively hardwood floors, or picked up the dry cleaning for the clothes that I wear, or waited around all day to fuck the cable guy. It's just assumed that I'll do it.
Okay, you're right. I fucking hate and resent you.
And that's why I lied to you.
Thank God that's over.
So I think that we're all going to agree that I won that.
I'm just saying. You wrote that script, so of course you think you won.
Between the two of us, only one of us could land our fucking lion's penis.
excuse me. You gave me fucking monologues when you have one sentence lines to say.
I know. I really stacked that in your favor, actually. But I just don't know that you met up to the challenge. That's all I'm saying.
At the climax of the fight, Piper calls and pretends that she's working while sitting around and getting fucking drunk, kind of like Siren right now.
That is correct. I haven't stopped working since I got off the plane.
So Prue tries to pull her better than thou bullshit and tries to make peace with Phoebe. Phoebe just rolls her eyes and like...
I just smacked that bitch.
I don't blame you. Honestly, that was not the thing to do. That was a way to open up and have a real conversation with your sister. But no, you're waiting until she's about to fucking die to do that. Phoebe's cool.
It's like Phoebe just kind of like loses it. Like it makes sense that Prue is upset that there was a lie involved in like a ghost hunt where people are dying. You know, legitimate reason to be upset. And Phoebe's like, well, what if I went ballistic and made it all about our personal issues?
Yeah, truly. I mean, overall.
But no, it's fine. I'm being so judgmental of Phoebe right now. And like, I've had fights like this with my sister. Like, I so have. There weren't ghosts involved. Well, maybe once. But I've definitely lived through this experience. And I always found myself in Prue's shoes. So like, I do get it. But I love scenes like this, especially in like series television, because like there's these characters that you really get to know and get invested in. And then when they have huge fights with each other, it's like it just gets so emotional and you like reach this like just almost like chaotic, out of control core of that character. And they're like revealing things about themselves in the process. And also, like, while fights are like great character studies, as people who are assholes, we also just enjoy the drama of it. So I love big fight scenes that get built up between core characters in long-running television shows. That is fucking crack to me. Oh my God. I love it.
It's a great mode of expression. I am not a person that argues anymore. I've had really heated fights with family members before, and usually it was because I tried to defend myself in an abusive situation. And while I don't think that Phoebe is being abused necessarily, she is really being taken advantage of and taken for granted. And that's not to say she doesn't mooch off of her sisters, because she does. But she's the baby. Like, that's just kind of, like, what happens that comes with the territory as the youngest.
Well, this is a bit of a growing up moment for Phoebe, because she's not going to stay in this immature place for, like, the rest of time. And she's going to come to a bit of a conclusion with herself at the end. But when you say it from that perspective, yes, Phoebe is expressing like she's mad at Prue, but it's more like she's overwhelmed with like the growing adult responsibility.
I can relate to that.
That she's coming into, and that gets expressed as anger at Prue because Prue, with one comment, picked open a scab that really has more to do with what Phoebe thinks about herself and her capabilities in the world.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, as somebody that is in Phoebe's age range now, is hard to grapple with. Becoming an adult and not having the same support system that everybody else has is really difficult. And I just really relate to Phoebe in season one because her life is very similar to mine.
And see, I have to understand that because I relate to Prue so much in season one because a lot of my life was spent having to be the grown-up and be responsible for making sure that other people were okay. So I get it. And it is frustrating when you want so much for them to be self-sufficient and take care of themselves so you can just get a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can't do it.
Yeah, I mean...
And now we're getting into my divorce. Ayo!
And that needs to be on a bingo card.
Siren's divorce? Yes, Con, please put Siren's divorce on a bingo card.
So I sort of absorbed Phoebe's role as the youngest in my family and Piper's role as the sort of like emotional buffer. That's been the majority of my life. I refer to myself as an emotional pack mule a lot of the time because I was the only one that was capable to like carry the burdens of my family. And it really affected me for a long time. And my situation is just very, very similar to what the sister situation is. You know, their family is gone. I just really understand what Phoebe is going through. And there's this like strive for independence and strive for self-sufficiency and strive for just like grappling how to be an adult with no parental guidance at all. You know, when she doesn't know how to do something, she can't call her mom and be like, how long do I baste a turkey for? You know, like that's not a thing. Not that Patty would know. Fucking bitch was cracked out all the time, but still.
I mean, God, she probably can't even cook a burger. She couldn't stay at work long enough. Tell you who inherited that trait. I would just, if we kind of got a little bit personal on that, so if I could wrap, I'd like to wrap up some of the comments that I made, because the way that Prue and Phoebe's relationship is, especially in season one, really reminds me of the way that me and my little sister's relationship used to be. And that is why I empathize with Prue so much, is because I've been there. But I don't want to be making like terrible comments about my sister at the same time, because yes, like, I was a bitch. I was controlling. I let my anxiety get the best of me and would flip out on her without her really even understanding what my problem was, you know? So, like, it's not a one-sided problem. It's a communication problem between two people with, like, different emotional mental problems. But the point is that she and I have both changed and grown, and neither of us are that same person mm-hmm. anymore. Just like Phoebe and Prue won't be that same person forever.
Oh, are you emotional right now, Siren?
I'm drunk.
Yeah, no, and I really relate to Phoebe's perspective because I basically have been her, you know. And I also really identify with Piper. And maybe that's why Piper's my favorite character and I'm upset she's not in this episode. But you definitely, communication is the key in any relationship. And Phoebe and Prue just aren't talking very well right now.
But obviously, like, so we made some comments about, like, how dumb it was that Piper's not in the episode because we like her and we like Holly Marie Combs. But this breakthrough and this fight could never have happened if Piper was in the episode. And that's why she couldn't be there. And I think that this fight is super important for these characters and their overarching story as a family. I think this fight is so important.
Yeah, and the situation that they're about to go into gets them to a space where they can talk a little bit more. So let's go forward. This is Misspelled, the part of the show where we critique the spells used by fantasy witches and talk about how a real witch might do the same thing. Prue and Phoebe are about to do a spell to lure in evil spirits, and it's to... The spell's directions are to mix mercury and acid with the victim's blood and pour it onto the grave of the evil spirit. That's kind of gross.
But like, ew. Why that though? So I guess that the first thing that we have to cover is, while witches in Facebook groups are very fond of saying that they're being plagued by evil spirits, there really isn't much in the way of spells to lure evil spirits to you because, well, that's just generally not the goal. However, I do think that elements of the spell make sense for the way it goes down. So the blood of Jackson's victim and his gravesite are taglocks, binding the spell to him. Taglock, if that's a new vocabulary word for you, is any ingredient in a spell that is personal to the person that you are trying to do the spell on.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't actually know that. That was a new one for me. I'd heard the word before, but I've never looked it up. So
yeah, so that's what a taglock means. And also that type of magic, using objects to represent a person in that way, is generally called sympathetic magic. So we have the two taglocks to bind the spell to Jackson. Mercury and acid are both corrosive, harmful materials, and the spell basically functions to hurt him. So they take his taglock and they throw corrosive materials on it and it hurts him. So that's pretty legit.
Yeah. I do want to say, it should be self-explanatory here, and I will say it again, but do not try this at home.
Oh my god, no.
Do not use mercury and acid if you do not have proper protective equipment. Just do, like, don't do this.
Well, it's really just unnecessary. I don't, what the fuck container is Prue mixing mercury and acid in that she's just carrying, like, in her car? And the container is fine.
I don't know. I do not fucking know.
I don't recommend that you get, like, blood samples that you stole from the police station and that you deface graves. And I don't recommend that you, work with materials like mercury and acid for no reason, especially if you don't know how to handle them properly. But all of that general warning aside, disclaimer, I do think that this spell format can function as like a basic tutorial for sympathetic magic, which is you get your taglocks, your items that represent the person you're trying to do the spell on. And this can even be you. You would have tag logs of yourself, and then you could get some kind of magical material that has a meaning that you're trying to convey in the spell and put those two objects together. And I'll give you just like a very basic example, which is, say you have a friend who is sick, you get a photograph of that friend or an object of theirs that's important to them, that's your taglock, and then you get like maybe a quartz crystal and some yarrow flowers that represent healing, and you put the crystal and the flowers on the photograph. Bam. Sympathetic magic.
As you mentioned, this like kind of brought up some stuff for me, mentioning like the Facebook groups where people always think that they're plagued by evil spirits. And I do personally believe that there are all kinds of spirits around us all the time, even harmful ones. But they're not so much like stabby, stabby, die, die entities like Jackson. They're more like, I'm going to amplify these horrible emotions and traumas and feed off your energy like you're a human golden corral kind of spirits. And you don't need to like have a spell to draw those things to you. They just have a way of...
You should not do a spell to draw those things to you.
No, you should not do that.
This should never be your goal.
I'm rereading this book called Sister of Darkness by Rachel Stavis, or R.H. Stavis. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, Siren.
Mm-mm.
I will probably talk about her again on the podcast. She is a non-denominational exorcist from California.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she has this clairvoyant ability, and she's tuned into like spirits that most people are not tuned into, and they feed on people's like emotional states and stuff, and she exorcises like high level celebrities and stuff.
I want to be an exorcist for celebrities. What the fuck? Oh my god. Oh my god, that's fucking awesome. Shit.
So I'm rereading her book, Sister of Darkness, The Chronicles of a Modern Exorcist, and it's really great and has lots of fun information about how to combat against negative entities and raise your like vibrational frequency. Some of the stuff that she talks about is a little far-fetched, but like there's something about the way that she tells her story, because it's so non-denominational. She talks about things that I already thought and I already felt, and so it was like validating, I guess.
Well, it's so would you say that it's without like that certain like religious conviction that only has meaning to people who follow the same religion?
Yes, it is very that. She uses lots of general terms like spirit, source, energy, vibration, frequency. I actually would really recommend the book to you. I think you might really enjoy it.
It sounds pretty cool. You had me at like exorcist to the stars, like
Yeah.
I need that energy in my life. I did not mean to get into this, but since I opened it with a pretty judgmental comment, I'll just say, I believe that all sorts of things are possible, and I believe that things are possible that I have no way of knowing about or being prepared for. I'm open to all sorts of possibilities. I mean, I think that being a witch who believes in science and is also a millennial with an understanding that we uncover new facts every fucking day, I think that just is the logical place to be, to accept that many things are possible and I'm never going to know everything. So yeah, I think that evil spirits are possible in all sorts of forms. I'm pretty damn sure of it. But I also think that a lot of claims about it that you see on the internet are like people who have something going on in their life that is probably very difficult or challenging for them, and they need some kind of attention or validation, and they are drawn to witchcraft or paganism for some reason, and they get in these groups and they think, oh, I saw this on Charmed or Buffy or Supernatural or whatever. So if I get on this group and turn my caps lock key on and act like I am being haunted, I'm going to get some attention from these witches, when really all that happens is you look fucking stupid.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's true.
I know I said that I wasn't trying to be judgmental, but I think we can all see where that ended up, and I'm not going to retract anything.
I can agree with that statement. I can agree with that, Missy. There's a lot of people that think that things are happening to them that are not happening, but I also think that I approach magic from such an observable way that I think that there are spiritual things that can happen to you that amplify your normal problems. Speaking of negative frequencies and malevolent spirits and evil doodads,
are we talking about me? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Yeah, Siren's bumping around in the mausoleum trying to scare Phoebe and Prue.
You know, if there's anything I'm doing in a mausoleum, you know what it is.
So they're scared of something, and Prue's like, oh, it's probably a zombie or a vampire, and Phoebe's like, where's Buffy when you need her? She's being better than you, Phoebe. That's where she is.
I know that comment in particular is going to piss off one of our new fans.
I don't know. I feel like she's going to agree with me.
So Jackson is trying to murder this poor construction worker who's, you know, allegedly connected to his case somehow, maybe, when the spell that the sisters cast on him gives him this hideous boil rash configuration, whatever, on his chest. It is disgusting.
It's so gross, especially for Charmed. It's nasty.
It's disgusting. But it also, like, it kind of looks like something that you would want those, like, cute women in those Japanese spa videos to pop with their little tool.
Ew! Siren!
Anyway, so this is happening, and Jackson is like,
What's going on?
And then Caron shows up and she says, witchcraft
sucks, doesn't it? That's gonna be my new catchphrase.
Best fucking line. Iconic.
Andy's trying to smuggle his witchy profile out of the police station when he is ambushed by internal affairs. And listen, I don't really even understand what internal affairs does, because if it was like a thing that really did its job, like in the real world, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't be cops anymore.
So, you know what? This might be a time to put together our copaganda jingle. Here's what I think about the way internal affairs is often represented on television. Internal affairs in cop TV shows and police procedurals are usually the bad guys, the dicks, the douchebags. They show up and they make it hard for the good cops to do their jobs because they're getting in the way with all their red tape and investigating people and getting good cops suspended or whatever. And like, that's basically what's going on here. Internal affairs is the aggressor. Andy and Daryl are the victims, and IA is getting in their way when they're just trying to do good by the people of San Francisco and help out those fucking witches. So the function of internal affairs in actual police departments is to investigate corruption and like criminal activities and bad behavior in general, like within the police force. So TV is telling us that the people who try to keep corruption out of police departments are the bad guys.
That sounds like propaganda to me.
It's coppa fucking ganda. Propaganda. Now, I'm not going to tell you that every internal affairs cop in the real world is like a good person who's like really trying to do that. I'm sure plenty of them are corrupt too. I mean, internal affairs people are the kind of people who decide, you know, whether or not you get put on a paid leave when you murder an innocent black teenager. And we know how often those things happen, so...
But they're there...
But anyway.
They're there to revisit all these cases from the previous episode of the season and how they're unsolved. And I just really don't think that that's as big of a deal as they make it. I don't think that's...
Oh my god, is this more propaganda? More propaganda!
So, yeah, Rodriguez thinks that Andy's covering for someone, and Andy gets all testosterone-y pepperoni and takes off.
You know, I think we even talked about this before, but it's just a recurring theme in Charmed, and I honestly think it's propaganda, where, like, they're, like, unsolved. You have all these unsolved cases. Every police department in the entire world has tons of unsolved cases, because that's just the way the world works. And part of it is due to corruption, and part of it is due to lack of evidence to solve crimes, because some criminals are smart enough to get away with it. So, like, I just don't really believe that Internal Affairs is going around being like, you haven't solved any of these cases in this massive city with tons of murders every day. And that means that you are covering up for some witches. You know, and, like...
So, back at the manor in the kitchen, Prue is dressed for open heart surgery and concocting some poison.
She so is. I know we made some remarks about her outfits already, but this top is held together by two buttons. And they are not close.
It's cute. I would wear that.
She looks great, and she's about to kill herself. And so she can wear whatever she wants in her own home.
Yeah, to be honest, though, like, every button-up shirt that I have looks like this on me if I stand up too straight, so...
Oh, honey.
So it's fine.
So I want... to, like, I want to be able to retract everything I just said and be like, you know, Prue can wear whatever the fuck she wants and I'm not judging her. However, I literally earlier today may or may not have been on the toilet and I read an article where Alyssa Milano said that she was pretty uncomfortable looking back on some of Charmed because she was always dressed like in nothing. And so, and she even said that that was the way that women had to dress to make Charmed successful. She said that in the interview. So we can stand here and say Prue should be able to wear whatever the fuck she wants, but are we actually looking at, like, sexual exploitation for the success of the program? So we may have neglected to mention earlier that the problem with vanquishing a ghost is that for some stupid reason, only a ghost can vanquish a ghost, so the charmed ones have to be dead and their spirits have to say the vanquishing spell to kill Jackson Ward. It's like a whole big complicated thing and it's not the way that it always works in the future. So whatever. But anyway, so that's the rule of the episode is that they have to be dead to kill Jackson. So in order to achieve this goal of being dead so she can kill somebody, Prue has concocted what she calls a killer cocktail and she lists some of the ingredients. She says it's made of oleander, jimson weed, bloodroot, and then she says, among other things. So there are whatever other ingredients involved that we don't know about. Prue says that if she drinks this, it will stop her heart immediately. She can be revived with CPR. She can be revived with CPR, but it has to be done within 4 minutes to avoid brain damage. And, like, I listened to that this last time around, and I was like, that cannot be a thing. It cannot. So I did a little bit of research, and listeners, you're never gonna fucking believe it. I fell into a goddamn rabbit hole over it. I'm just gonna talk about the three herbs listed, and I did some research on the actual physiological effects of them, and then Phoenix did some research on the magical uses of them. So I think this is gonna be a pretty fascinating discussion.
Yes, I'm excited.
Yes, okay, so oleander can decrease heart rate and blood pressure. It can do that. But its major effects are diarrhea, vomiting, confusion, fainting, total lung failure, and straight up death. So CPR alone may keep a person alive, but it absolutely will not cure oleander poisoning. In order to cure oleander poisoning, a person usually has to go through taking an antidote, getting their stomach pumped, having intravenous fluids rushed in, and being on a ventilator. And a single leaf of oleander contains enough poison to kill a full-grown adult.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So just drinking that alone, like, she's probably toast.
So according to the Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs by Scott Cunningham, oleander has love associations, but I'm not really sure why. It goes on to say that in Italian folk practices, keeping any part of oleander in the home will bring sickness, disgrace, and misfortune to the people in the home. So what?
So, jimson weed actually elevates blood pressure and heart rate, but otherwise has similar symptoms to oleander, but also includes hallucinations, which is typical for its use in early witchcraft and kind of the reason that jimson weed is considered a witchy herb. Jimson weed does not have a significant effect on the lungs. Apparently, you also treat Jimson weed with laxatives instead of having your stomach pumped. So instead of throwing it up, you need to shit it out, I guess. While Jimson weed can kill some people with one dose, it typically requires long-term ingestion to actually be fatal in and of itself. It will mad fuck you up, though. In addition to the hallucinations and altered mental state, like, it'll also just make you feel like crap.
Magically, I couldn't find anything in my personal library about Jimson weed, which is not super surprising. I also couldn't find anything about any of its folk names, but it is in the nightshade family, which means it's pretty toxic, and as such might have associations with protection, hexes, hex breaking, and like baneful magic, but none of that like light flowery stuff.
Bloodroot is more of an irritant than a killer. Bloodroot is used in some homeopathic medicines, but its efficacy is not scientifically proven, and it has the potential to only cause more problems. Bloodroot causes nausea, vomiting, drowsiness, and skin rashes. Long-term ingestion can cause low blood pressure, coma, and for some reason, glaucoma, the eye disease.
Yikes.
Yikes. Yeah. But the treatment for the effects of bloodroot is to just fucking stop taking bloodroot.
Magically, bloodroot is used for love, protection, and purification magic. You can carry them or place them in areas around your home to achieve these effects, but it's not to be burned or ingested.
Fun fact about bloodroot. If you cut open the roots, it will literally seep a blood red sap. That's where it gets its name from. Not so fun fact about bloodroot. A black salve made of bloodroot is marketed as a treatment for skin problems like moles, skin tags, lesions, and even skin cancer. When this substance literally kills skin tissue, bloodroot is not regulated by the FDA, you guys. It is legal to sell it and make sketchy medical claims about what it does. This is terrible. Like, this shit can fuck you up. It can have a temporary effect on things like moles and stuff like that because it will kill that tissue that you don't want, the extra tissue that is like the mole or whatever you have going on. But it will also kill the skin around it and the skin under it and, like, leave you with like a big fucking hole or an even worse lesion or all sorts of problems. Bloodroot salve will fuck up your skin, and it is marketed as a skin treatment specifically to new age people. So I did not know that we were gonna get into this fucking conspiracy theory, this herbal conspiracy theory, y'all, but we did. And so after Phoenix and I discovered this information, we were just like, we got to make a comment about it. Like, we have to.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to say is that it's so important that as occultists, we are skeptical and do not simply accept these kinds of claims without engaging in science and doing our own research. Just because someone who claims to be a witch or a pagan tells you about some magical or this fucking word, homeopathic property of an herb, does not mean you should accept that at face value because you are playing with your health. So you need to do more research than just believing what it says on the label they printed on their fucking laser jet. So anyway, Prue's potion is bullshit. It probably would kill her, especially if it contained other ingredients as well. But it would not make her immediately pass out so much as it would wreck all of her internal organs and slowly kill her in about 24 to 48 hours while she was in excruciating pain and vomiting and shitting all over herself. And CPR would not do a damn thing to save her. And she certainly would not be fine after being revived.
I also want to say that while walking the poisoner path is totally valid if you choose to do so, if it's something that interests you or you're just passionate about, do you. However, everyday witches, us like say a little prayer to get to the bus on time, witches don't really have a use for stuff like that. You have to be careful when you're using herbs, toxic or not, because you never know what someone could be allergic to. You never know what could have a harmful effect on your pets. There are things that could go wrong, especially when burning or ingesting anything. And like I said earlier, it should go without saying, but to be responsible in the episode, do not try any of these things at home. Do not work with mercury and acid. Don't knowingly ingest things that you know are going to be harmful. Don't use plants to harm other people. It might be a little hypocritical of me because I do have toxic plants in my own herb collection, but I have them just to have, not turn myself into a ghost. Yeah. So they fight. They fight over who gets to die, and Prue wins. I just wish Piper were here. Anyway, let's resolve our issues now. You know, they have their conversation. They're like, I love you. And then she's like, oh no, I love you. And it's just like this really sweet moment between the two sisters, but they're about to get fucked up, so.
I do like how Phoebe says, you're only saying that because you're about to die.
You're only saying that because you're about to die.
It's a pretty good line. It's a kind of funny line.
It is pretty funny.
And it's, but the thing is that it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
But it's also funny. So the phone rings literally once, and then the answering machine picks it up. How are you going to answer your phone that fast? Man, I take a second to decide whether or not I can talk to anybody, and then I got to figure out who the fuck is calling. But anyway, the phone rings literally once, and the answering machine picks it up. It's Claire, and she says, Prue, you're late. You're fired. And that's it. And as soon as Claire says Prue is fired, Jackson shows up to beat the fuck out of him. Prue drinks her messed up poison, and right after she does that, Jackson knocks Phoebe the fuck out.
Oh, yeah.
She's on the ground. She is out. She went down in one hit, you pathetic bitch. He's a ghost. He barely even touched you. He went right through you. But then Prue's like, well, that sucked. Guess I'll die.
Me when I'm minorly inconvenienced. Well, I guess I'll just die.
But oh, beware, because the serial killer is coming at you with a fucking pie server. He has a pie server, Phoenix.
He sure does.
A pie server. This murder weapon is Art Deco. What the fuck?
Forget Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This ghost is Pie Server Playhouse.
This is the California Pie Server Massacre.
So Prue starts to say the ghost spell as a ghost, and it's all fine and dandy until Andy butts in and fucking ruins everything by being a stupid, vulnerable man.
He ruins everything all the time. Really? Oh my god, Andy.
Honestly, truly, just like... he tries to save Prue too early, and a very sweaty Jackson comes at Andy with this pointless cutlery, and Prue yells, and somehow Andy hears her. I don't know how.
Even though she's a ghost and it's already been established, she can't hear or see ghosts.
Yeah, he was just freaking out about ghosts 20 minutes ago, and now he's fucking the Long Island medium.
Yeah, now he's Jennifer Love Hewitt. He's the ghost whisperer.
Why did she have to say the spell so many times?
Well, because as usual, she's doing everything by herself. After everything that happens, and they're all like, let's defeat him using teamwork. So wow, does it fucking go. Phoebe lies on the kitchen floor and takes a nappy nap while Prue literally dies and kills them all by herself.
This spell in general is so stupid. They're supposed to be Wiccan, as we've established, but they're not. They're supposed to be, but they're not. One of the elements of the pentacle is spirit, bitch. Like, you have a spirit inside of you. You don't have to die to access that.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Like, we all have spirit all the time. Like,
we've got spirit. Yes, we do. We've got spirit. How about you?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Thank you. That is exactly what I was trying to fucking say.
It's totally unnecessary to, I don't know what cockamamie fucking witch, what sort of Emily Dickinson fucking bitch wrote this spell. But unnecessary.
And also, it doesn't even rhyme.
It doesn't, but it would.
Not that your spells have to rhyme, but like.
Also, this spell with banishing herbs, done. No poison. You don't need that. No mama. Uh-uh. Apparently, ghosts can only be killed on the astral plane and charmed. How come we never interact with this problem later when Prue can astral project?
Yes. Correct. I don't think of any times during the period where Prue can astral project where they deal with a situation like this. So, of course, that's why we couldn't answer the question. But in theory, if that's all it takes, then Prue could just astral project and say the spell to vanquish the ghost. Of course, as we establish at the end of season 7, apparently everybody can astral project if they really, really believe they can.
Anything's possible if you just believe.
Basically, so, you know, why don't they just do that? Is it possibly because the rules are cockamamie and change every 45 minutes?
I mean, they also get real cockamamie with what the astral plane is. Charmed and dimensional travel is not a continuity story. String theory? Bitch, they ain't got no theories, okay? Anyway, eventually the spell works and Jackson dissipates and Barefoot Contessa Karen Bukkake shows up. and snags his soul out of mid-vanquish with her bare fucking hands and is like, see ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
So this is why she sucks. So she went to all this trouble to arrange all this shit, and she literally had Prue right where she wanted her, and then she shows up too late to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It's just poor planning and with the villains of this show.
Get a fucking watch, Karen, because he was late.
So Prue is realived by Andy's CPR and magical artifact kisses. And I feel like that's the last we see. She wakes up and Phoebe wakes up and she's like, bitch, I got clocked.
Yeah, Phoebe gets up just in time to have done nothing. She's like, yeah, I was in the episode.
So the next day we cut to work, right? That's the next scene?
Yeah, and Claire is like, bitch, really? You're fired. But Andy shows up and lies to Claire, tells her this elaborate story about how Prue is busting, get this, an Asian gang. There are Asian extras off screen as well. Who don't exist. Yeah, but he tells this elaborate lie. And then Claire is like, oh, well, if you were secretly helping the police and putting your life in jeopardy and using, you know, your skills that you're supposed to use at work on this weird, like, alias mission, then, okay, I guess you're not fired.
And then that's a wrap on Claire, thank God.
That's a wrap on Claire. A series wrap on Claire.
Oh.
Which I know that Phoenix is probably so pleased with, but I'm gonna miss her.
I'm not. I hate Claire.
That girl's a bitch.
She's
and I love
awful.
It.
Awful. She reminds me too much of a boss that I had, and I don't like her.
I live for Claire. I want to be Claire one day. It is my goal in life to be Claire.
And so in Prue's office, Andy says, hey, you know, I gave it some thought and I still don't want to be with you, freaky bitch. So
yeah, you'll never be a good mother to my kid or my garage. So we're donezo.
Yeah, so not going to happen as far as we can tell for the foreseeable future. Not even Phoebe can predict this one from the kitchen counter. Prue and Phoebe come home from going grocery shopping together. Piper shows up with Lays and says, I know you guys were fighting. And they're like, thanks for the wilting necklaces, but we're fine.
Yeah, so they just, after they get into this big fight about a lie, they just straight up lie to Piper about the fact that they got into a huge fight and fought a ghost.
Yeah, they're like, let me...
Like, nah, everything's chill, bitch. You don't need to know.
All right, final thoughts. What are your final thoughts?
I don't know, Phoenix, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts were, this episode is fine. There's some really good moments in it. I feel like we got a little bit more in depth than I originally anticipated us getting, which was really interesting and fun. I had a nice time talking about this one. And I feel like I knew we would. I knew we would have fun with this one, because when we watched it together, we were fucking dying. So,
we were.
Also, if anybody wants to see that, if you guys want to see Siren and I watch a Charmed episode together and just be fucking like bitches about it, let us know, because we'll like totally do an Instagram live or something and do that.
We could do that.
We experienced a lot of deaths in this episode, and I feel like my favorite one has to be the judge. It has to be. That's my kill of the day, the judge.
Because we're just like, no sympathy for him whatsoever.
Yeah, it's the best death.
My kill of the day is definitely Prue Halliwell. This is the first time I'm gonna say that, but it won't be the last.
Kill of the day. So if I were gonna rate this episode, I think Siren seems to enjoy this episode a bit more than I do. I don't have like super strong feelings about it, so the only fair rating I can think of is 2 bare feet.
That would be a great rating if it was completely different. But anyway, if I were going to have to rate this episode, I would honestly just give it 1 knockdown, drag out, full on brawl between the sisters. I love it. Fight, bitches. Fight. Use the chair. I love it.
All right, Siren, where can the people find you?
If you want to, you can follow my Facebook meme page, Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. You can follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular. You can newly follow me on Instagram at Siren Spectacular. However, I'm a little wary about that because I didn't know that Instagram was going to suggest me to my fucking dad. What the fuck? Or you can watch my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantation.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow me on Twitter at Phoenix Arcana _. You can follow the podcast on all social media platforms at WBRcast. If you have a question or something you would like to hear us talk about, please feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com. Also, I'd like to say we did recently switch platforms, and we are now hosted by Anchor. This means that a lot of our statistics from our previous episodes on our old host network have disappeared. So if you could like us, review us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts in particular, if you can rate and review there, it would really help us out in getting our numbers back up, which will help us grow the pod even more. So
we would love that. And just to let you know what we've been through, our previous podcast service would not let us call ourselves bitches anymore. They literally took bitches out of our name without notifying us, which is ridiculous. And then made Phoenix wait 7 days just before they could say no to his appeal on the subject. And my response to that is, you can stop me from calling myself a bitch, but you can't stop me from being a bitch. So we is outie. All right, Brenda Bukkake.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And getting jizzed on the face.
Bye. Bye. When was the last time you went to get grilled? When was the last time you went to get oh no, I really thought I could do it. Hold on. Okay. When was the last time you went to get the I'm sorry. Okay. I'm crying. It's so good. It's just so good. Okay, hold on. I'm gonna take my headphones off, and I'm gonna just take a second, and then I'm gonna get it. I will.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?